Nobody cares for you like family. Family Heating
and Air. When you call to have your home or business's heating and air serviced, what do you expect from them? A salesman in a colorful truck? Or do you expect a highly trained expert with your best intentions in mind? The answer is obvious. Call the company that treats you like family. My name's Malia, and I look forward to answering your call.
Family Heating and Air Conditioning is your trusted local independent American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer.
Nobody cares for you like family. Family Heating and Air.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee. Brought to you by Luxair Premium Residential Systems, a smart choice in home comfort. On 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
The Indianapolis Motor Speedway was covered in bricks all the way around. As years went by, asphalt replaced them, but not all of them. There's still a strip of the original foundation right at the finish line, 36 inches wide. They call it the Yard of Bricks. And those bricks have seen it all. They've seen more than 100 runnings of the Indianapolis 500, the most famous race in the world. They've seen the speedway packed with 300,000 fans, making more noise than the cars. A giant party on the other side of the walls. They've seen the greatest drivers on earth take the checkered flag. Every year, they've seen a bottle of milk spilled in celebration. 50 years ago, they saw a 29-year-old immigrant from Nazareth, Pennsylvania, win the Indianapolis 500.
I still can't believe it's true. I'm going to have to be pinching myself all night.
I thought I might win a half a dozen more, and I tried. But that one was the greatest moment of my life.
I'll never have a better day than the day I pulled into victory lane.
First win in 79 was great. It was almost like, okay, we won. Let's go on and win another one.
Indy's really the one thing I've ever done in my life. The more I did it, the more I wanted success.
If these bricks could talk, boy, what a story they could tell.
Want to add a chapter to this story, race? It takes a great team, a fast car, and the courage to accept the danger that comes with it.
Big contact, car in the air.
That was frightening.
It takes some of the best athletes and minds on earth. An American institution, a Memorial Day tradition, it is older than all of us. It's where history comes to life and where history is made.
We are racing at Indianapolis.
One of them will emerge as champion. Scream across the finish line under the afternoon sky. A checkered flag above his head. The field in his wake, as always. Those ancient bricks beneath his wheels.
Race week continues, and you know in May we multitask, and we're always thinking about the Indianapolis 500 coming up. Our open from tonight, courtesy of NBC Sports, that was, I think, the open, or as they say, the tease, to NBC's first Indianapolis 500 telecast in 2019, voiced by the legendary Mario Andretti. We'll continue to go through some of those, and you know there's going to be Delta Force at some point featuring the great Paul Page, so we look forward to more of that, and we'll get set for Road Course Weekend with the GMR IndyCar Grand Prix coming up Friday and Saturday. Race time, 3:30, well, technically 3:45 is the green on Saturday. I know TV, NBC, Channel 13 locally will be on at 3:30. I'm betting IndyCar Radio is on earlier with more extensive pre-race show at 3 o'clock, but I mention that because, you know, sometimes you see a telecast begin and it might be 45 minutes until it goes green. Nope, don't mess around. They'll be climbing in the cars when we go on the air at 3:30, and the command will be just a few minutes later, so ain't gonna mess around. We're gonna get to racing and kick off the month of May. But I didn't mention already, I should say, hello, welcome, Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan, Eddie Garrison is in our Indianapolis studios. We're gonna roll through a lot of questions, Kurt, tonight on the program, because that's the beauty of being every night. I'm not aware of any massive news we have to cover, so we can do a little catching up tonight.
Yeah, it's fun. I actually really enjoy these hour-long shows. It's just enough time for a couple of guys and a bunch of race fans to gather to talk about and listen to and think about the Indianapolis 500. I really appreciate what jQuery and Mike Thompson are doing with Beyond the Bricks after this show. So if you can't get your 2 hours of Phil nightly during the month of May, well, you'll just have to find another way.
Well, there's more because there are podcasts. I need to find it. Somebody tweeted this out the other day. I apologize. I don't have the link in front of me. But someone who I know I've interacted with before has archived pretty much everything this radio station has done and other people have done. So you can find old Donald Davidson shows. I think a lot of our shows are on there. Some of the other features that the radio station going back to WIBC has done. So there's a lot of cool stuff out there to get you ready for the month of May. And sometimes I really struggle with consuming everything, not just audio, but journalists like yourself put together fantastic pieces. A lot of them are race week and they're feature types. And I just don't get to it. And I try to email them to me. And sometimes when I'm catching up in September, I'll go back and read a great piece that Nathan Brown or David Malsher Lopez or someone did back in May. So there's a lot going on, and it's better to have a lot than not enough.
On that topic, the Indy 500 year program, the Indy 500 program arrived today. So it's really exciting. I think that's like a Christmas day for me to get the program, start looking through it. They'll be on sale here shortly, maybe in the museum by the end of the week. And you'll want to get one of those. One of the best stories in the publication this year is about all the Scandinavian drivers. Joey Barnes did a nice piece between IndyCar and Indy Next. It feels like the Scandinavians have taken over in this sport. And they're not only involved and high in numbers, they're successful. Marcus Ericsson leading the way. Felix Rosenquist, Christian Lundgaard, Christian Rasmussen. And that only begins to tell the story. So a lot of good reading in that program, and people will be excited to see it. And you'll probably start to see pictures of it over the next few days. But that's always a big day for me.
All right, let's start getting into catching up on Twitter questions from several days ago. John Day at 81 Indy asked, I don't know if either of you will even know this, but do you have any idea what percentage of IMS seating is typically sold during the 500-hour renewal window following each year's race? I tweeted Doug about it, haven't heard back, but I also know he's super busy.
So I don't know the actual number. I should, and I should just text the person who knows the answer to that question and get you the exact answer. I may still do it here before the end of this show, but I can, because I've forgotten that was one of the questions we wanted to have answers. But I can tell you that if you value your seats, especially a prime seat, you should do it during the renewal period, because those seats then pretty quickly thereafter are available to other people, unless you've had them for, you know, an annual basis. But if you just had them for the first time and you want them again, you should renew pretty quickly.
I think I've heard Doug talk about this before, that it is that window right after the race where they sell the most tickets. Then I think it's not super busy for a little while. And then in the springtime, it starts to kick up again. And, you know, I think this, I'm going to guess, the last couple of months, and there's probably an uptick around Christmas as well, but the last couple of months and even every day, I'm going to guess, is pretty significant, but also probably pretty consistent.
Well, and you got to remember that we have a finite number of people taking tickets and, you know, taking orders either by the phone or processing them off the computer. So it's, there is a physical number of tickets that would be a limit how many you could turn in a given day. But I'm telling you, it's consistent. It is consistent from about, you know, the 1st of March on. It's you want a job where you're going to work, try the ticket office. That's a busy place.
You're selling as many tickets as, say, for a one-day event as a really successful minor league baseball team sells for the entire season.
Yeah.
And a lot of those are going to the same people over and over, but you've got all these different people. So yes, quite a massive undertaking.
And keep in mind that the ticket office at IMS sells the tickets now for the Iowa Speedway event, the Detroit Grand Prix, and the Brickyard weekend, and now an IMSA weekend in September. So it's a really busy stretch there.
Dave Ragazio asks, which Indy 500 finish do you find more heartbreaking, impactful? 2006 with Marco and Hornish or 2011 with Hildebrand and Weldon? Great question. I just did a feature that I think you'll see little chat on YouTube, on the NBC Sports YouTube page. Lee Diffie and I talking about the NBC top 10 Indy 500s. And we brought in our vice president of statistical data, Russ Thompson, to join the program today. And we talked about 2011. I'll let you start. Which one? More heartbreaking and impactful?
Well, I don't know. Impactful is probably 06, but heartbreaking, I might go to 2011. And I guess I say 2011, you know, that's J.R. Hildebrand's moment. And not that Marco didn't have other moments. He did win other races. He also is an Andretti, and by that's a pretty good victory lap to take in its own right. I'd say it's J.R. Hildebrand. Just
me too.
Yeah, it's, you know, he's, I don't want to paint, you know, J.R. as an everyman, so to speak, that Marco isn't, because that's not fair to either one of them. But J.R. is kind of one of the, you know, he's just, that's his moment. That is his moment in sports and his career. And again, I've poorly answered that question, but I think I would lean toward 2011.
Well, losing on the last straightaway is heartbreaking enough if you're Marco Andretti. And I think he understood the ramifications, you know, because I think some would say, you're 19 years old, you're going to have plenty of more opportunities. But one, he knew his grandfather's story, who won when he was young and never won in however many more starts, 25 plus more starts, and his dad, who could have, should have won so many times and was in position to win that day late as well. So he understood you can't guarantee you're going to get another chance, but he, you know, it's not like he made a mistake at the end. He just was beaten. Whereas for poor JR, he only has the heartbreak, but he has people saying, you know, how can you screw up in that fashion? Well, it's a little harder than it appears. There's more to it than that. And I wouldn't say that he just simply failed at the end, but it got away from him and he never won a race. He finished second in another race, but he never won a race. Maybe that's better than just finishing second straight up, because we may not remember that. If you finish second straight up, you may be forgotten. At least J.R. Hildebrand is always going to be remembered in Indy 500 history.
Well, and it's also, that's a painful thing for him. I remember having a conversation with him not that long ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I said, you know, boy, just the way you always handled that question when you got it, it was really admirable. And he said, you don't know how much I wanted to fight back on that one. It just kills him. It's so painful. And the other thing about Marco is, you know, he won other races. As I said, he won two races in his career that continues, by the way. And he was the pole sitter for the 2020 Indy 500. That's his moment, if you will. I mean, that's, you know, his celebration, his victory, if you will. That's his big moment at Indy. JR never had another one. So I guess if you think about it in a global sense, that's why I still go back to JR.
Brian Campbell, Brian_Campbell1. All this talk about drivers needing budget. With global racing empires for Penske and Ganassi and Andretti, don't they have an extra $1 million somewhere to fund any car and driver they want? Do teams get any share of TV and gate revenue at all?
No, the answer to the last question is no. And honestly, the answer to the first question is no. From the standpoint, yeah, they have extra money to throw, and they do. There are years when you know, there are extra cars, or, you know, in Penske's case right now, I'm sure that some of the money from his profits, so to speak, shows up in other race teams. But, you know, these guys are businessmen and these guys have families and they have, you know, a bottom line that they're trying to reach for the business. And they'll, you know, look, you know, they always say this, whatever you have in racing, you're going to spend. And so whether they spend it on an extra driver or an extra car, you know, they're spending that money on a better engineer or attracting some extra help or development or testing or whatever it is.
It's like any business. You have a budget, and all of Team Penske's drivers are fully hired. No one is, to my knowledge, has ever been asked to bring a sponsor to Team Penske. I'm sure they are open to it. If you say, hey, why don't you call this company? Because I think they'd be a good candidate, but no one is required to bring budget to Team Penske. The other teams, it's mix and match, and it's usually not all. Some of the Andretti drivers do not bring any budget. Some of the Ganassi drivers do not bring any budget. The goal for any driver is to become that driver. That goes back, and this is probably in reference to the Marcus Ericsson conversation. He wants to join that crowd, the Scott Dixon crowd that does not bring any budget. He got started as someone that was required to bring budget. Now he's won multiple races. He's won the Indy 500. He, I think, in fairness, would believe, I need to be in that crowd now, but that is still a point of discussion moving forward for them. So if they could find extra money, they would simply hand it out. But to just hand it out because, you know, if you're Penske Corp and you're making a lot of money, well, that doesn't, it's not all the same. It's not all the same just because the company is doing well. You have to kind of look at the motorsports entity, and that's what makes motorsports so very challenging. Paul Dalby, Field of 33, asked this. I touched on this briefly, but I'll go back to it. How many people have been on the Indy 500 broadcasts, a part of both TV and radio, the network broadcasts? He has the ones that immediately come to my mind are Paul, Bobby Unser, Bob Jenkins, Gary Gerald, Brian Hammonds, Vince Welch, Hinchtown, and me. Hinchtown, if those don't remember, he was our analyst in 2010, I think it was, while he was still an Indy Lights driver, because Davey Hamilton was driving in the race at that time. A few others have come up with some others, and I thought of this one too. Larry Rice, I thought Larry did radio, and someone suggested that, and I know
he
was on TV.
He did radio.
He was on TV. Chris Economaki obviously had guest appearances for both. Yeah, someone pointed out that Sally Larvick, Paul Page's wife, did some reporting for NBC IndyCar broadcast, but not with ABC or 500 work would have been radio only. So I throw this out there because I'm not sure if there's anyone we are forgetting. Oh, this was the name I mentioned the other night when I touched on this. Charlie Brockman from the 60s. I don't know if Charlie was ever on the ABC television broadcast, but he was the host of the closed circuit feeds before Wide World of Sports started doing with Jim McKay an Indy 500 broadcast. I don't know if he ever appeared on the ABC or not, but if you want to count that, Charlie was definitely a big part of the IMS radio network. So that was the other one that I had, but I thought that was a fun question. Maybe it's biased because I think it's pretty cool to have done both.
Yeah, it is very cool to have done both. And you could, there's probably a couple more, honestly, but we'd have to go through the list. And you know, it's really amazing how many people just have been on like the radio network broadcast. It's pretty long. Did we say Donald Davidson? It's possible Donald might have made both.
I'm sure he has appeared on the television, you know, as a subject, but I don't know that he was ever actually a working member of the team.
Yeah, could be.
But I could be wrong about that. You know, and someone pointed out too, hey, Letterman was on one of the ABC broadcasts, and he's been interviewed. I've interviewed him, and I'm sure others have too, on Indy 500 broadcasts. But again, not quite the same scenario there, but cool question. Sasha Khan, Sasha Like Soup is the handle. In recent years, 500 qualifying has been heavily influenced by draw time. In the future, could a Fast Friday 3-6 qualifying session be added with the same order run on Saturday? Cars with hotter earlier Friday time get cooler early Saturday and vice versa.
It's kind of like the Masters, you know, on Saturday or on Thursday, you start in the morning, then Friday, you've got the afternoon, you know, time slot. So, and then just the other half of the field does just the opposite. I kind of like it, but I don't think that's what we'll see. But qualifying is a weekend show, and I expect it to continue at least in the foreseeable future.
So I've thrown out that idea before. If we really want to get creative with schedules, consider if your television partner would play ball. And I don't know that it it's not likely on NBC. You're not getting Friday afternoon on NBC, and you're not getting Friday evening on NBC. So that would be if you were within ESPN, where a sports network, or if you wanted to do it on USA, do a primetime qualifying to determine the poll or something like that. If you wanted, and there's a lot of things involved in that, but it's just something if somebody really wanted to dig deep, maybe. So maybe there is a scenario, something like that, if you wanted to make a shorter program. And I think there could be something to said for our attention span. So let's not do a 6-hour program on Saturday. Let's do 2.5 hours on Friday. Everybody goes through the line one time, and then you come back and do something in a shorter period on Saturday, and it's not a 6-hour show. Maybe add in a concert to try to make it more of an event. If you really want to be creative, which there are roadblocks to that too, because we all know that people don't like change. Many people do not like change when it comes to the Indianapolis 500. So you're never, ever going to satisfy anywhere close to everyone with any kind of tweak, no matter how good or potentially bad it is.
Yep, I agree with that. I just suspect that, Fast Friday is, from a Speedway standpoint, is a really important day. It really helps set the stage and for what the weekend could be. It's a very good PR day, too, because you've got big numbers on the speed chart. People are excited mm-hmm. about qualifying. It's kind of a day in unto itself. So, from a, largely publicity standpoint and getting people excited about what's to come, I think that serves a very important role.
If you're really worried about, if you want to take out the luck of the draw, what I would suggest is you start qualifying at 1 p.m. and going back to, does it need to be 11 a.m.? Does it start at 11 a.m. again this year?
Yeah, I believe so.
Does it really need to be? So actually, it's almost 7 hours. It really doesn't need to be 7 hours. Might be something worth thinking about to get a higher percentage of the qualifying on network television instead of just on streaming. Maybe you start at 1 o'clock. And some, because then it's pretty consistent temperatures, and it really doesn't start to change again since we're on Eastern time until after 5 o'clock. So then you have people that want to gamble and go back out. So that would be something I would think about as well, that maybe you do that. And I don't think that hurts your day. You've still got plenty of content. You still got a chance to go through the line two times. Someone will say, well, yeah, but what if it rains? Then you only have 5 hours. And that's true. You could have wasted 2 hours of daylight when you could have been on track, but sometimes you take chances. But you know what? You could run until 8. Yeah. You're just on the back end, you have a plan that you run until 8 o'clock.
I might start, funny as it sounds, I might start at noon just to, if you go, if you're at the end of the line and you get done at if you start at noon and you're at the end of the line at 2:30, 2:45, you've got some time to kind of cool down and turn around and get ready for later. Mm-hmm. The deeper you push it into the day, the less time you have if you're at the back part of the line to turn your program around for a second run.
That would be a compromise because
it's the 11 o'clock hour.
The difference between 11 a.m. and 1:30. Yes. Starting at noon, you're not getting that much of an advantage. And it kind of feels like, especially if the sun is out, that advantage is gone by the time you get to 12:15 or so. Apex Circuit asks, and this was touched on either last night or the night before, how do ticket sales look this year? And I was this on, who was answering this on our show? Or did I hear Doug on another show?
Well,
I hear they're going well.
Doug's been on another show and consistently is.
Oh, that's right. You were citing that. You were citing this, I think.
Yeah, that's right. And by the way, I got the answer on the renewal period. Represents 3/4 of the tickets are renewed in that first, 6 weeks or whatever the number of days after the Indy 500. 3/4 of them are renewed each year.
Is there a 500 hours promotion? I thought that's what the question was.
Whatever the time period, I said 6 weeks, whatever it is, the time period after the Indy 500, there's a renewal period. I'm sorry, I don't always know that, but
yeah.
But that period represents 3/4 of the tickets for the next year. That's unbelievable.
Indy 500 fan one, I think had a good response when, I was just kind of rambling about the honest jealousy, the jealousy I think some of us have over the popularity of Formula One, wondering why not us, he says. While you may want more opulence in IndyCar, I'd rather not pay $175 for a bratwurst at Road America. And my response was, excellent point. We should probably just enjoy what we enjoy, enjoy what we like. So let's stop worrying about them and let's enjoy the fact that we can actually go see in person the motorsport event that we enjoy the most and not need to take out a mortgage or just not be priced out, because we are priced out of Formula One at the moment. So good for us. We're not priced out of IndyCar. It's still very competitive in the sports landscape, and I think you'd probably find cheaper than a lot of options.
By the way, my over-under on brats at Road America is 2.5 per day.
Okay. So, yeah, that would be 350, 525 in the Formula One world. Sam Myers at Basement Ball said, I've been listening to Trackside for probably 10 years, and I'm greatly honored that my tweet was used as a news source on the show last night. So thank you for contributing, Sam. Maggie asks, who will be the top finishing rookie at the 500 this year?
I had to give some thought to that. It's first of all, it's not a huge list to start with. You got Stingray Robb, you've got Benjamin Peterson, you got Augustine Canapino. Is that it? Do we have three? No. R.C. Enerson would be a fourth if he makes the race, assuming all these guys make the race. I'm going to go out on a limb and I was going to say Canapino, but I'm going to go with Stingray Robb.
I'm going to say Canapino, because he just seems to be smart, get things done. I don't think he'll press the issue, assuming he makes the race, and I think he'll run around. And, you know, he'll finish 18th or something like that and be there at the end. But, yeah, there's not anybody that stands out. That can change. You know, the coin cars sometimes have really good setups. Foyt is better at Indy than they are at other places. So, you know, they could be in the mix there. So, fun. Good question out of that from Matt Henniger. Love the coverage in May with both Behind the Bricks and Trackside. Will you ever do a combo show for 2 hours? Well, no, we can barely get the two of us together for the same time, let alone four of us. And no one needs to hear four people trying to find airtime. So that works out great. Jake and Mike have the second hour. We have the first hour.
By the way, he's asking, you know, the thing is about the Indy Lights, Indy Next drivers. It's not like those guys who have run Indy Next, meaning Stingray Robb and Benjamin Peterson, this isn't a year where those Indy Next drivers have stellar oval track credentials. I mean, those two guys weren't, they, you know, the hallmark of their time. Well, and
none of them have been to a super speedway.
Well, but even
Texas, they've been to Texas now. Yeah.
But you know what I mean? I mean, it's not like, you know, some of these drivers that have come up through Indy Next had won races on ovals. And these two, that isn't the hallmark of their careers. So that's why I don't lean more maybe toward one than the other.
Well, and also, you know, let's just be honest. It's a different kind of rookie class. We don't have the reigning Indy Lights champion. He didn't get a ride. Yep. So the best, most qualified driver, the others are fine. They're good. But the guy who showed that he was better didn't get a chance this year. He may still, and will probably be hanging around in May. He's got an oval license now, so you never know. Matt also asked if we can go over the changes for qualifying, especially with 34 cars. I know we touched on that a few weeks ago. We'll get to it again. But it's similar to the past. The only change is now that they're going to do the start of the top 12 qualifying one round, one time through, then, I believe, do the last row shootout, and then come back and do the fast six. Also, there was a question we had recently about cooling. I talked to Jay Fry today, and he said, we're going to announce some plans. We're going to talk to the teams. So I'm not going to totally get in what the plans were, but I'll just say this. IndyCar has a plan to help the cars cool the engines and make it, give them a better chance on a second run in the last row shootout to potentially go faster. So stay tuned, and we'll let IndyCar make that announcement as we get closer to qualifying. More tweets and other things all coming up in our news of the day, too. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
This is Alex Palou, and you're listening to Trackside.
As you know, May in Indianapolis means racing, including big-time racing on the dirt at Circle City Raceway on their all-new clay surface. May 19th, it's the second annual C.J. Rayburn Tribute, with $10,000 to win super late models and Boss 410 sprints. That's a week from Friday. May 24th and 25th, it's the USAC AmSoil Sprint Car National Championships. Circle City Raceway at the Marion County Fairgrounds. Discounts for military, first responders, veterans, seniors, and teachers. Tickets and info at CircleCityRaceway.com. Kurt, what is our news of the day?
Well, you probably saw it on social media, and man, does that thing look super. And that souped-up race car, if you will, is a Corvette to pace the Indianapolis 500. You know, it's a Chevy track, and we will continue to have Chevys, but having a Corvette Z06, the first hardtop convertible, that red mist metallic color looks really good. So that pace car is going to be looking good in somebody's garage come early June. So because
Sarah
the winning
Fisher will be driving it again.
The winning driver will get one of the pace cars, so it'll look good. I think we've had Chevrolets every year since 1996 when it was a Viper. So anyway, really cool stuff. Even if the news is not the fact that General Motors has the car again, the news is that this thing is looks great.
All right, more Twitter questions from at Waiting for Indy. I listen every day at Trackside in the month of May. One of my favorite segments is the Thursday before race weekend for your driver tiers. Oh, very nice. With the Burger Bash being on that Thursday, which day will you do your tier? Shout out to Aaron and Amy in Wisconsin. So I'm glad he pointed that out. Then I need to be more clear on our dates. No, the Burger Bash is not on Thursday. The Burger Bash is Monday, May 22nd. Same location as last year, the USAC building. Across the street. And this is also kind of confusing, too. It's the Prime 47 Burger Bash. It's not at Prime 47. It's still an outdoor event. So it's at the USAC back parking lot. Beautiful building right across from 16th in Georgetown. It's free for outside viewing. If you feel like you want a little bit extra and want to donate to the IU Simon Comprehensive Cancer Center, a $100 donation makes you a VIP, and then you get access to the indoor facilities. The Prime 47 free food. There will be Prime 47 steak burgers for sale. Indy Brew Bus is providing our adult beverages. We'll have non-adult beverages as well. And then that's kind of where the green room will be. The drivers will be coming through, and you have a separated seating section. So that's still on Monday. Now, what gets confusing is I'm a promoter of many events now. There's another one on Thursday for our race weekend guests. So that is at Silo, the cool auto conservancy downtown with a nice entertainment facility. That is not a free event. That is ticketed, VIP, high-level food, drink, band, drivers, simulator, and more. That's Thursday night. JacksonLeeRacing.com. Go to his blog. That's the easiest place to find the links for that and more details to come. So, yes, Kurt, we will do the tiers still on Thursday. No change in that.
Okay, that's good. By the way, from our people in the ticket office, yes, 70 to 75% of the Indy 5 tickets are sold in the renewal window. But remember that even though you might have 40 years of seniority, that's great, and we appreciate it, but everyone around you does too. So when you ask for an upgrade, give some flexibility in the request, because not everyone can have the top row aisle seats. There you go.
That's true. Let's build a new top row. Oh, wait a minute. Then that's no longer the top row. Yeah.
That's right.
Speaking of the Burger Bash, the vice president of the Burger Bash responded to your quest for questions on the show. Cambyland, Mark Lynch, has a dozen or so. I don't know if we'll get to all of these. First is, overall, it's been a while since ECRs looked competitive and a couple of years since they won a race. Why do you think that is? And do you think they right the ship this month?
Well, you know, non-Indianapolis 500 aside, that's a different conversation. But at Indy, they've been very competitive. They just haven't won the race. I mean, Connor Daly's led, what, each of the last 2 years? Renus VK has led the race. They've qualified on the front row. I think they've had a front row qualifier the last 2 years. Obviously, Ed Carpenter's been very good at the Speedway. I think there will come a time when Ed Carpenter Racing wins the Indy 500. Now, whether that's with Ed driving or not, that's another story. But I don't know. I know they've been plenty competitive at Indy. It just hasn't worked out for them.
And yeah, that's not in debate. They're fast at Indy, but they have hit a dry spell away from Indy that really kind of started, after the Barber race that Renus VK almost won last year. Not a lot of results on road and street courses. He finished fourth in one of the Iowa races, but I'm just looking at Renus from last year, 21st, 33rd. He crashed out of the 500 from up front, 16th, 17th, fourth in Mid-Ohio, 13th, fourth at Iowa, 19th, 6th, 12th, 26th, 20th, 14th, and this year hasn't started much better. So they desperately need things to turn around. And I see no reason to believe they won't be strong again for Indy. GP, different matter. They've been good there in the past, so I think we'll learn something about where they're at coming up this weekend as well. What's the word on a third manufacturer? It would seem like the month of May is a good time to bring potential manufacturers to the Speedway. Yes, it would be. What's the word? I have no idea. I'm not aware of a word, and that doesn't mean that they're not close. If and when we ever see a third manufacturer, there's a decent chance that we get an email notification that says, we've got a media availability tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., and then boom, there you go. It's announced. Penske Entertainment, Penske Corp can do things that way sometimes. Rest assured that any prospect, every prospect has been invited to enjoy the Indianapolis 500. You know, I mentioned this, I think, on the air, and I think it's okay to mention now because they confirmed that they did consider it. I remember in 2019, sitting across a breakfast table from David Wilson, the head of TRD, who was there not in any Toyota gear, just kind of incognito. And I happened to be with someone, Townsend Bell, who knew him, and that's how I noticed who David was. He said, yeah, I'm just here checking things out. They're checking things out. So I suspect there might be others here checking things out, and I hope David Wilson comes back. You know, I still think that's not done. They considered it. They weren't willing to do it now. Let's keep talking, and maybe they would be interested by 2026, and I'm sure they're working on some others at this point as well. Cambyland says, what's your go-to ice cream flavor? Do you like movies with gladiators? Max Verstappen said last week he would never race at Indy. Why do you think that is?
I don't know.
Well,
do you have a sense? I mean, other than unless Formula One races there.
Yeah, it's scary. And a lot of these guys have admitted that. I don't know if Max has, but when you see Formula One guys, I appreciate and respect the ones that just say, yeah, that looks insane. And I think we should blow up those quotes and plaster them on 100 Days to Indy. That it does take a special kind of person. And also from realistics, you know, I know drivers that have said this. I'm not super keen of these super speedways, but I need a job, so I do it. You know, I got into this to road course race, but the biggest race in the world and the biggest race we do is a super speedway, so I need to embrace that. And they've learned to love it and they enjoy that competition. But, you know, if you're Max Verstappen or Lewis Hamilton, you don't need the paycheck. So I get it why they're not willing to take the risk involved, but it's one of the reasons why we admire drivers who do the Indy 500.
Keep in mind, I'm glad you pointed this out, there have been just as many drivers who, in this group of drivers that we're talking about, who didn't have any real excitement for competing at Indy. Dario Franchitti comes to mind, and he got here, he saw it, he enjoyed it, he won it, he loves it, you know, so There are people who have a sort of a transformation, and there are many others like that.
And I think that comment, though, more is from mile-and-a-half pack racing tracks.
Agreed.
I'm not finding – you're right about Dario, that he was not in love with the place, and some of that was you know, born on the CART IRL split. And remember, he was a part of Team Green, who feels that Paul Tracy had the Indy 500 stolen from him, as do a lot of people. We won't get into that. That's a story for another day. But there was animosity between the camps, and it took him a little while to really embrace it. But I think generally the comment that I've heard before about racing for a paycheck, that would apply to an old-fashioned pack race at Texas Motor Speedway or Vegas or some of the others. I think, generally speaking, they all get and they love the Indianapolis 500. Out of time in this segment. We'll see what we missed and more coming up and tweets we don't get to. We may still get to some in the next segment, but we've got tomorrow. It's Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
This is...
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Trackside, brought to you by Luxair Premium Residential Systems, a smart choice in home comfort, on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
All right, we are mobile for the final segment tonight. I thought the little handy-dandy app we use would work, but it's not. I wanted to get outside for just a little bit, took a break. So, a couple of tweets that have come in. For the Love of Indy has a good point. We were talking about impactful races, and I thought about this. I don't like to talk about it either, but impactful in 2011. It's one of the reasons why I don't really enjoy revisiting that race, not only for the heartbreak of J.R. Hildebrand, but it makes me sad to think about Dan. And he points out if Weldon doesn't win that race, he likely doesn't compete at Vegas in October. Dark to think about, but still. And it's true. Also, I can't read who this is from Nathan. Why not have the qualifying draw be determined by the finishing order of the GP, tie the events together a bit more? That's a good point. That's a good thing to consider. However, I would warn everyone and you, Nathan, remember, people don't like change. And if you did something like that and you go away from the 6:15 Friday before qualifying draw, there would be outrage, and you would have to deal with that. Also, for the Love of Indy, pointed out that Nicole Briscoe has been on the radio and television broadcast for the 500. How could I forget that? We worked together in the 500 broadcast, and she was the host, I think, the last year that ABC did the 500 in 2018. Also, Brian Frederick points out, I think his handle is at 500 Indy 1911, that it's Dr. Indy, at Dr. Indy 500, that has all those archived audio versions that are really, really cool. If you're curious about such things, the ratings are out for the weekend. NASCAR did beat Formula One, so it's kind of strange. The Formula One telecast included 90 minutes of pre-race, so if you look at it that way, NASCAR easily wins. And I think the rating was 0.9 and 1.64 million over the average. But if you take out the pre-race, you find a much bigger number for the Formula One race. It's still down a little bit from last year, down from 2.6 million, but it was a little over 2 million in that circumstance. And Formula One easily won the head-to-head in the coveted younger demographic. All right, we're out of time. We'll try again tomorrow night. Stay tuned. Jake Query and Mike Thompson are coming up next. 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.